You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Liza. And together we are the Empowered Caregivers. We're here today with Kirsten Norsleen, the program director at Gilda's Club, and Debbie Deutsch. Did I get that one right?
You did.
All right. The patient advocate at Gilda's Club. So typically when we start the show, we like to start by asking, what is your either personal or professional connection with caregivers? So we will start with Kirsten.
All right. So my personal connection with caregivers is that I have been one for friends and family, and knowing how to be a caregiver can sometimes be a really tricky path to navigate. And so at Gilda's Club, we help people to find that their way on that path.
Wonderful. And how about you, Debbie? Have you had any personal or professional experience with caregiving?
Both. I'm a trained patient advocate, so I work professionally with folks who are caregivers, and I've also served as primary caregiver for my husband through a cancer diagnosis, as well as my mother.
Okay. Wow. Well, thank you for your service, you guys.
Yes.
Can you give us an overview of what Gilda's Club does? I mean, I have a general sense they help people that are dealing with cancer, but I don't really know what that help looks like or what the programming is like.
That's a really great question, and one that we get a lot. And a lot of times the information that people have is actually oddly incorrect. So what we do is provide support groups, education, healthy living activities for anyone with any kind of cancer and the people that care about them. So you don't have to have a specific kind of cancer. You don't have to be, you know, a specific gender. You don't have to be at any age. So any ages, any cancers, any stages of cancer, including grief and loss is part of what we do.
Okay.
And we see this as an excellent supplement to medical care, and everything that we offer is at no cost.
Wonderful.
Wow. And so you have to raise all your funding?
We do.
Wow. That's amazing. When you say that all of those services are available for anyone who's got the cancer diagnosis and whoever takes care of them?
Mm-hmm. That's true. And we serve all of the state of Wisconsin because we are working with facilitators with professional licenses. There are limitations to our service areas, and for us right now it is just the state of Wisconsin.
Gotcha.
But it's a national organization.
It's a national organization. Our national organization is actually the cancer support community. So anybody across the country, you can go online and find the cancer support community and find all of the, you know, your local affiliates or access to helplines and a lot of other resources.
Wow.
And how does Gilda's Club support specifically caregivers?
Yeah, so we have specific, in addition to our regular, you know, mixed bag groups, I call them, or opportunities, being our yoga classes and our yoga and tai chi and healthy living things and art classes and cooking classes. Specifically for caregivers, we have weekly groups that are called our family and friends groups, and they do not have, they're the person that they're caring for does not have to be part of the Gilda's Club community either. So each individual comes in, you know, independently, which I think is really important. You don't have to be attached to someone.
Yes.
Because sometimes people are like, yeah, I don't want any of that. But as a caregiver, it can be so challenging to really know how to best support someone. You think you're doing a really great job, and they're like, I don't want you doing that. Mm. Or you think you're doing a great job, and they're like, look, I really need this instead. And so our weekly groups for caregivers are really fabulous opportunities for caregivers to come and talk to other caregivers about what's going on, what some of the challenges are, to have that really honored, free and clear space to say what they need to say about kind of their lived experience, because it can be really tough.
I can imagine. And are those support groups, are they just open for those conversations, or do you have like some structured, I don't know if I want to say training for caregivers, but you know, the how to do this job that you have no idea?
Good question. So we don't have any structured training as to how to do that, but let me say that our support groups are, they're closed groups, so we assign people to groups, right? Okay. Even though everything we do is free, we do have a few, you know, venues to make sure that the right person is in the right group.
Sure.
Right?
That makes sense.
And because group experience can be so important to connect with people, trust is really important, community is really important, we want to make sure that we have some controls on that. So the groups are really very much free form of what you bring in is what you're going to be dealing with. But we do offer, you know, workshops occasionally. We have a program called Open to Options, which can be a really great opportunity for people to say, okay, so these are the questions that I have and how do I want to prioritize them as they're looking at, you know, changes in treatment plans or making decisions about treatment. Because we think that caregivers are part of that treatment team too. We believe that.
Yes.
And we really want caregivers to feel like they're part of that team. So Open to Options is an opportunity for us to talk about that, and our you know, occasional our workshops that we have can give people like, here's how to ask questions, and here's how to listen. And currently we do have a partners group that is going on that has really helped people to listen to the concerns of their partners in a different way. So
yeah, that's wonderful to have that safe space where you can do that. Knowing that you serve the state of Wisconsin, then are these held virtually, in person, or both?
Well, currently things are held virtually. Everything we're doing is on Zoom, and which has been, for a lot of our participants, has been a real benefit.
Yeah.
Sure.
We have people coming from, you know, three sides of the state and all of Dane County to weekly groups. That is really amazing. You know, I mean, even getting across the county can be a hassle if you have to be somewhere at 6 o'clock.
Sure.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So that has been a real benefit to us. We are moving back into doing some things in person, mm-hmm. and those will be those are based on things that are, you know, more. It's certain people are more vulnerable.
Sure.
Right. And so it's the folks that have less vulnerability that we're including in in-person activities at this point.
That makes sense. And yeah. I was thinking about that as far as the Zoom goes. I mean, you're dealing with a very vulnerable mm-hmm. population.
Yeah.
So do you think once things go back in person, you'll always keep that Zoom option?
That is our plan.
Yeah. Did you have anything that you wanted to add to that, Kristen?
Not specifically about that. I mean, with only a few more minutes before the break, I do want to ask you guys about some of our questions that relate to the theme for this month. So this month we've been looking at the RAISE Family Caregiver Act and understanding that it's federal legislation that's trying to address the caregiver crisis. The overall focus is to raise awareness and improve the experience of being a family caregiver. The legislation proposes to do this by identifying 5 primary goals and outlining 26 recommendations. So there's a lot going on in there, right? It's part of Biden's Build Back Better plan. And we're really excited that we can focus on the family caregiver piece of the RAISE. And so one of the goals is all about how family caregivers need an access to a whole array of flexible stuff. And then there's another one that's focusing on the availability for diverse counseling. Why do you think it's important for the caregivers to have access to their own supports separate from the patient that they're also caring for, right?
So do you want to take this one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So if you think about a cancer patient and the focus is on the diagnosis and the prognosis and the treatment plan and the symptoms and the med management and all of those things, appropriately so.
Sure.
So the focus is on is on the patient, and that is fantastic. But then the caregiver is immersed in not only those things, but they also, for example, might suddenly be thrust into the role of being the household financial manager. They might have their own health conditions that they're managing. Right. You know, we always worry about how is the patient doing emotionally? Well, how is the caregiver doing emotionally? What kinds of concerns do they have about the future? I can promise you they have concerns. So in a lot of ways, the caregiver is in an equally challenging position as the patient, I would argue. It's a tough role. It's an honor and it's a service to be a caregiver.
Definitely.
It is, and it's hard to just jump in, you know, without any knowledge of how to do this role. You know, it's kind of like a new parent, a first-time parent. What is going on? So that's awesome that you guys have those supports.
Yeah, and I was doing a little research getting ready for this, and there's 53 million caregivers in the United States. Mm-hmm. That's like a mind-blowing number of people. And, you know, we're talking specifically today about people who are cancer caregivers, right? Mm-hmm. But all of the other caregivers are out there, too, that are really challenged by, you know, how do I manage this complicated care? What is my sense of purpose? Because all of a sudden, people very frequently, all of their focus goes into the patient,
right?
Exactly. So their self-care suffers. Their their mental health can take a real toll. Anxiety, depression.
Yeah, I've seen some statistics. 40 to 70% of caregivers suffer from depression.
Yeah.
And I don't think that we shared in our introduction. The reason that Kristen and I got into this is we both have young adults with autism and some other intellectual disabilities and things going on. And it was all consuming. Mm-hmm. And we kind of got to the place of burnt out and felt, you know, we can't be alone in this. And we're not. We're among 53 million other people going through it every day.
You have a community.
Yes, we have a community. So we're going to go into a short break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk some more with Kirsten and Debbie from Gilda's Club in Middleton? Middleton address?
It's in Middleton, but it's Gilda's Club Madison.
Madison. Gotcha.
Great. Thanks.
Host Kristen, and you're listening to the Empower Caregiver Show. We're here with Kirsten and Debbie from Gilda's Club Madison.
So, Debbie, we haven't really gotten a chance to hear much about the actual job you have. You're a patient advocacy specialist, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, do you actually help caregivers as well?
I do.
Okay. And so, can you talk a little bit about what your role is and then any advice you would give caregivers specifically about how to navigate all the info, right? We're in the we're post information age, and it's great to have all these resources and have all this, you know, new data and new information, but also it can get super overwhelming.
Absolutely. So, yes, I do work with many caregivers. And what I always like to encourage folks to do is think of yourself in your new role as a caregiver as you're going on a trip, right? So where's your North Star? Let's sketch out a map. And equally important, let's figure out who your team is. So you've got the patient's medical team, and they are certainly throwing out a lot of very complicated information. You're trying to wade through that. And as a caregiver, you're also dealing with the emotional toll of trying to process this. And this can all change on a dime. You know, some cancer trajectories are years, and some are days, and sometimes there are pivots that happen very quickly, and it's a lot. So I always encourage folks to have some people on your team that you can process all of this with. And also, don't be afraid to ask for help. Help is out there. Ask for help, even if it's help identifying where to go to get help.
Right.
And the other thing is, don't be afraid to delegate. As you are forming your team, recognize the skill sets of your team member and ask for help. You don't have to do it all yourself, because chances are you're going to be doing this for the long haul, if that's a short time or a long time, and you have to have enough self-care and wherewithal to get through all of that.
Sure. Good point. I think we kind of also just went into the next question that Liza was going to ask you. So I'm just going to jump into, what do you think is the most important thing for a caregiver who's caring for a person with cancer to know? So as Liza was explaining in the last segment, we both know a lot about autism, and my daughter has epilepsy, so I know about that. But I don't know specifically what's important for us to understand about cancer, especially since it has so many different trajectories.
Sure. And that is probably my biggest takeaway as being a personal caregiver, is just it really blows your hair back about how things can change. You know, you think you've got everything kind of situated, and then there's a pivot and it looks much different. So you have to figure that out. And it's also very important to keep at the forefront as a cancer caregiver what the patient's goals and wishes are, and realize that those will change, they will evolve. And what you thought was the plan this week might not be the plan next week, and that's okay. So you want to help the patient and yourself as caregiver kind of ride those waves.
So Debbie, I guess because I'm sort of foreign to this, can you be a little more specific about what causes those pivots or how?
Oh, definitely. Okay. So let's say a cancer patient is given a diagnosis and they're given a prognosis and they're given a few options for a treatment plan, and the patient weighs the pluses and minuses of those and opts for treatment plan A, let's say.
Okay.
And things can go along quite nicely for a while, but then there might come a point where that treatment plan no longer makes sense. So the patient might say, I don't want to do that anymore. The risks and the ardor of it don't meet the benefits.
Gotcha.
It doesn't make sense anymore. I want to change this. So okay, you might go back to the drawing board and say, well, what are the other options?
Okay.
A patient might say, you know, I want to focus not so much on treating this, but on remaining comfortable. I realize. Okay. For whatever reasons, based on what my care team is, my medical care team is telling me, that this might not be curable. So I don't want to put all of my energy into an aggressive treatment plan. I want to focus on comfort and quality of life. That's a definite pivot. And sometimes caregivers struggle with that. They're like, oh, you know, you've got to keep pushing. You've got to keep doing all of these things. And it's really up to the patient. And as caregivers, we need to honor that. It's really up to the patient. What does the patient want? And realize that, for sure, these goals can change radically. And,
right. And especially,
okay.
I'm
you want to hold that space for them.
Right. And I'm assuming because, well, we had on guests from a Grace, mm-hmm. and I'm assuming a lot of times it's that sense of, well, you're watching your loved one, but you're not living their experience. You're not living their pain. You're not feeling their pain. And it's really important, I got from those guests, to not give them the message, to not give the patient the message that you're giving up because you're
absolutely
walking away from the aggressive treatment.
Absolutely. And as a caregiver, you know, there are so many emotions that we're processing ourselves, and we don't want to lose our loved one. We don't want to watch them die. Who would? So you have to, you know, sometimes you just kind of have to put that aside and honor what it is the patient wants, even if it's not necessarily what you would want for them or what you would agree to if you were making those decisions. It's not what the caregiver wants, it's what the patient wants.
Exactly. So do you have any advice, or can you speak to how you help caregivers deal with that grieving process? Because that's what it is, even if the person hasn't actually passed to the next world, right? There's a lot of grief. I know my dad died of cancer, and we said, well, we actually lost him about 3 years before he actually passed on, right? Mm-hmm. So what kind of advice do you give to caregivers when they're going through that, or how to handle that grief stuff?
Well, for many folks, there's a spiritual component to that, and that could be very different. I know in Madison, Wisconsin, you're as likely to be working with a United Methodist as you are a Buddhist. There are many, many faith beliefs in our diverse community, and that's great. So certainly if they can plug into spiritual support, what kind of, who is in their personal circle of support, the caregiver, in addition to the patient, they've got to make sure their own basic needs are being met. So I would say spiritual support and their personal circle. And also, again, Gilda's Club. We're here to
exactly.
Help
you're
with
here
all of
to
that.
Promote. Right. And you guys are probably one of the best known in town for being able to help that. So thanks for being here. And we will be back for one more second in just a moment. Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Kristen, and I'm here with my co-host Liza, and we've been talking with Kirsten Norsling, the program director at Gilda's Club, and Debbie Deutsch, who is a patient advocate.
I would imagine that when somebody first gets the diagnosis, that there's just an outpour of support. But how do caregivers ask for help down the road when they need it?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because things change and situations change and support, enthusiasm changes, right? I think that continuing to check in with people is really important. I think that being open is really important. We do have, our national organization does have a program called mylifeline.org, which is an online scheduling program where you can also do all your updates, and it's really great because you can do updates so you're not telling the same story 27 times.
Sure.
Which then when it gets passed from point person A to person B to person Q is a much different story.
Yeah.
Right? So you're managing your story, and there's also a scheduling thing in there where you can ask for people to help get the kids to soccer practice. Right, you want to be at the games, but if you can avoid getting to practices all the time because you're taking care of somebody, that's an important thing. So mylifeline.org is one thing where people can schedule and sign up for the things that you can do. It's really hard. It's really hard to ask for help.
It is.
And when you ask somebody to do something and they're like, no, I can't do that, that just reinforces the fact that you're in this alone.
Right.
So, so that's a great way, people select how they get what help they need and how they get the help. And if Debbie's looking for somebody to help mow the lawn on Tuesday and I have a grass allergy, but she asked me, I'm not the right person for that, but I am super, super willing to go and do just about anything. Go do her grocery shopping.
I was just going to say that you're probably a master at grocery shopping, right?
Right? I'll clean the bathroom if she needs me to.
Oh, you're
good.
That's
a friend.
Yes, yes.
So I love that. So you don't have to be a Gilda's Club affiliate. You can just go on to, can you say it one more time, please?
It's mylifeline.org.
Okay. I know a couple friends that have gone through this with their husbands, and I wish that we'd had that because we were kind of scrambling. And like you said, there's a lot in the beginning, and then there's all this awkwardness, mm-hmm. and nobody sustains it. So I think I'm going to use that one a lot. So
yeah. Sometimes just checking in, mm-hmm. Somebody's been going through something for a long time. It's like, hey, how you doing? Or, hey, let's go get tea. Or, hey, can I bring you a bottle of wine if you're a wine drinker? Sometimes you just need to do something normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm getting struck too when you just said that, how are you? It's probably also giving them permission to not talk about the cancer.
Yeah. It's really important to ask them how they're doing. Because it's like some people will say, I disappeared for 3 years while my partner had cancer.
Sure. Mm. Sure.
Yeah.
And really that's. Let's not do that.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. And so that kind of leads into what I want to ask you next. I mean, is there any way that you, from all of this experience, both personally and professionally, that you see people or families can get themselves prepared beforehand? Right. So a cancer diagnosis probably comes as a shock to most people,
most
I would
times.
Assume. right? And so is there something that, you know, you wish you could tell everybody you know and love, do this in case you ever have to face cancer?
So here's the thing. Cancer is just one of those bumps in the road sometimes, right? And you know, I think it's important for us to, number one, recognize that not all cancers are terminal. Mm. There are, you know, 16 million cancer survivors in the world.
Wow.
And
I just got the chills. That's awesome.
Yeah. And actually, in the United States, that's not the world. In the United States. Okay. And which makes it even more chilling. But yeah. So there's a lot of people walking around that have had a cancer diagnosis. And I think the more we just have open communication about, you know, how we are and, mm-hmm. and like, honest, like, how you doing? Well, you know, I mean, we're in the Midwest, right? Most people, yes. How you doing? You get the, I'm all right. Mm-hmm. I'm fine.
The Midwest nice.
Right? Yeah. But the reality is, and you know what? I'm really struggling right now and I'm not exactly sure how to deal with it. Can we take 2 minutes and like toss this out on the table and sift through it and pick through, see if there's any great seeds that I can germinate? That's a really great thing to have, like, that tool of great communication with your family and friends already there.
Sure. And willing to take the risk and be transparent, right?
Yeah.
Not saying everything's fine all the time when it really might not be. So right. Then you get used to it. I think what I'm hearing you say is if you practice that kind of exposure and that kind of authenticity, you become more prepared in case you have to deal with something that's as intense as what a possible diagnosis of cancer could be.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and some people, honestly, some people get a cancer diagnosis, they do their treatment, they figure out what they need to do, and they're good to go. And sure. and it's like, great. And other people really struggle, and it trips up every, you know, every trauma that they've had in their lives, every loss, every, you know, all of their challenges are like, bam, right there in their face. And as we can just learn how to take care of ourselves really, really well, you know, it's a benefit all over the place for everybody.
For everyone. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. I'm kind of taking a step back here, but I know you addressed this a little bit earlier, Debbie, about caregivers and the person receiving care when they're not on the same page. Mm-hmm. How do you help some of those people work through those times?
Well, I think that really speaks to our support groups. And our support groups, again, are professionally moderated by licensed mental health professionals. And it provides a safe place for caregivers to come together and share their experiences. And that's a fantastic organic teaching tool, truly. Mm-hmm. And it benefits the person who is sharing the story, and it benefits the people who are hearing the story.
I bet.
Okay. Yeah. How do you suggest, or how do you personally, because you guys are in this field, dance around or deal with that combination of sadness and fear when dealing with the reality of cancer?
I wouldn't use the term dance around it. I would rather encourage the thought of let's join hands and walk through this together rather than dance around it. We can get through it together.
Okay. Okay. And I mean, from your own personal experiences, how have you guys managed the sadness and fear? How have you held hands with whoever it was that you were caring for? I know you mentioned a husband, right? And a mother, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My husband had a really pretty positive cancer experience, and he was also a Gilda's Club member, and he was part of a support group, and he really benefited from that. My mother, unbelievably, was diagnosed with an advanced cancer diagnosis, and she was gone within 9 days.
Oh, wow.
That was, I mean, talk about pivots. You know, we went from, okay, what's the treatment plan, to, oh my God, do we need to talk about a long-term care facility, to literally within hours talking about hospice. It was unbelievable. And in situations like that, I can honestly say you just try to hang on. Mm-hmm. Honestly, mm-hmm. It's still to this day, it's been 5 months since this happened, but still I can... It's hard to talk about it because it all kept coming like this. And you have to to realize that it's really about the patient. And, you know, a support group is a fantastic place to kind, as Kirsten said, to kind of unpack that stuff. What do you do with that? Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes you have to share it over and over just in your own process.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes total sense. I'm sorry to hear about that loss, Debbie, and I appreciate you being so vulnerable right now, you know, with it still being so fresh. And as I was listening to what I was hearing, too, is kind of the need to just take it hour by hour, sometimes, minute by minute, moment by moment, right?
Sometimes.
And that's right. I mean, all of the stuff we're seeing in the mental health world is mindfulness, mindfulness, live in the present, take it one moment at a time, because that's all you have, and that's all we know.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I feel like you handled that well, just like watching you right now and listening to you. It seems like you have that grace of being able to do that.
I agree, and I can't even imagine the whirlwind of emotions and logistics and reaching out to the family and doing all of that in a period of 9 days. It's always so hard when these moments get, when they turn sad. I mean there's... Right. There's some sadness there, but pivoting a little bit, how have you seen caregivers that just rock the role, that you're just like, oh, I wish everyone could have a person like this on their team?
Yeah. I think about one couple this was a guy who came in and he had absolutely no interest in being in a support group. He's like, nope, I'm just here for my wife. Well, mm-hmm. he showed up and sat, and, you know, and his wife had a terminal cancer, and she actually was just humor and beauty and grace all the way through, and she was just the coolest woman. Mm-hmm. But this guy was like, nope, I'm just gonna sit here. I'm like, all right. And during group, and that's exactly what he did. He sat in our library for a while, and I wasn't facilitating the group, so I just happened to stop in at the library and sit down with him. It's like, hey, yo, what's up? And we had this great conversation. And the next week he asked if he could be part of the group. And, and he kept talking about how that conversation that we had in the library was just so important to him, because it's like, you guys are on this trip together and she's the lead. And like, oh yeah, I keep forgetting that, because I've been the lead for everything up to this point. And he totally shifted how he did things, and he was just such a beautiful person through all of it. It was just amazing.
Wow. It gave me the chills again.
Me too. Yeah, there's a lot of chills
there
today.
There are a lot of chills today.
Right. And I can imagine that knowing you've had that influence and that impact on someone is got to bring you joy, right? And because this has got to be a tough job, let's be for real. And so I can hear that. Is there anything else that helps give you joy in this job that you two have?
Oh my God, I just love this job so much. I've been there for almost 14 years, and I love our community, right? It's like, and I've always been this community person, and we call ourselves a club. And, you know, and our bigger organization is the Cancer Support Community. I would love to be the Gilda's Club community, because it really says more. Club just feels a little exclusive sometimes, and it's not. It's for everybody who's dealing with a cancer diagnosis. It doesn't matter, you know, what your beliefs are and where you're at. It just, like, come be a part of the community, and the strength in it is just amazing. Last night we had an art show, which was our first in-person activity in 2 years.
Oh, wow. Oh, that must have been so exciting.
And one of the teens that did her art, she'd been a part of Gilda since she was 6, and she's 15. Wow. And she's like, she's looking out around the building. She's like, I grew up here.
Sure.
Like, all right. That was like the cherry on the night. Totally.
Right. Exactly.
It was really
That's
cool.
great. Yeah. Debbie, anything for you specific you want to share?
Just so I think what brings us joy is just knowing that we're helping people very organically, one at a time. And I think that the tragedy is when people feel like they have to, you know, soldier through this without getting any support or any help. So, you know, what we always say is we are here, and it's so that no one feels that they are facing cancer alone. Mm-hmm. That is what it absolutely boils down to.
Mm-hmm. It's a great mission statement. So we've got just a moment to give you an opportunity to promote anything specific about Gilda's Club, an event, or how people can donate.
Yeah. So all of our events and donation pieces are on our website, gildasclubmadison.org.
Okay.
We have a barbecue in June. We've got Over the Edge, which is an opportunity to go over the Hilton downtown, 14 stories.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
Yeah. and a run in October. And then we've got workshops coming up. Like on Monday, this coming Monday night, we got a workshop on dealing with your racing mind and with specific tips on how to get control over that.
Oh, so wow. I would love to attend that.
It's on Zoom at 6 o'clock. Right. So you can go ahead and register.
All right. Well, so a great way to find all this stuff, everybody, is at gildasclubmadison.org. Debbie, Kirsten, you guys have been a real delight today. Thank you so much for bringing yourself and your time here and sharing your stories.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. Liza, you are not going to lift me up the Hilton where she said, or wherever that fundraiser is, about jumping off a roof?
I know. I had to ask more about that. I'm kind of intrigued. 13 stories. You can find out more at gildasclubmadison.org.
All right, Liza, I will do wine with you. I will do any kind of art with you, but I am not going to be jumping off a building with you.
Well, then I'll just give you a push.
thank you. All right. So what really stood out to you? This was a show that I think had a lot of like interesting twists and turns to it. What part stood out to you?
I think the thing that just kept hitting home for me is that this is or has to be such an emotional journey. You know, we have kids with disabilities, and yes, there's a range of emotions that go along with that, but this has to be next level. So I think having that support system and community just has to be key. How do you get through it any other way?
Right. I think what really struck me is how important it is as a caregiver to really recognize it's about the patient, right? And so we have to struggle with that to some degree with our kids, but I think when we're dealing with health conditions, and so, you know, I have a few friends that are dealing with some pretty profound mental illness, and I want to tell them what to do, but it isn't really about what I think they should do. It's really about what they want their life to look like. And I loved how Debbie described it. Have your North Star and then have your pathways there with your different teams. I think she got off on a little bit of a tangent because she only mentioned the medical team, but I think the way she led into it, she was going to talk about a few other teams. And I think it's just that idea that I got a visual of, you know, a North Star up at the top of the page, and then these different streams leading to the North Star. I mean, I don't know why all of a sudden we're on Earth and then we're in the sky, but anyway, leading to that point and knowing that they might, you know, have like some different kind of boulder in the way or some kind of obstacle. So they might have to work around it and take a different twist. It's just a good reminder to me that I can't control other people.
No, that's true. And that does go, I mean, it's kind of, I think, a caregiver's instinct, right? You know, you want to take care, you want to problem solve, you want to fix things, you want to be there, you want to help. And, you know, realizing that you need to take that into consideration, what the caree wants. And I remember a conversation that we had with a friend in the past, and you were there, and she was saying about what she wanted her daughter to do for work and employment and stuff when she was older. Her daughter's on the autism spectrum. And I just kind of had to stop her and say, well, why are you making these decisions? Isn't it her right. life, you know, and to include her in that. And that's, it's challenging. But I think more, I was thinking about this earlier in regards to the community component, and it has to be hard because you have this overwhelm, right, of emotions and things you have to do, and everything's, you know, just overwhelm. And then yet you need that community. And so the two really don't seem to go hand in hand, right? When you're dealing with overwhelm and a great amount of emotion, the last thing at least I want to do is go out and connect with the community. But you kind of have to just realize the importance in that.
Right. Well, and I think that, you know, as we're exploring more and more about what it means to be a caregiver and what feels so overwhelming and intense about it is that I agree that dancing around death didn't sound good, but I think as a caregiver, we are constantly dancing, right? We have to sway this way. We have to rock this way because it is about keeping that balance of, I have to take care of myself. I have to take care of this person. I have to respect what this person wants. I have to have my own boundaries. I have to find resources. I have to have self-care. I have to lean and connect on a community of people who get what I'm going through. I mean, dang, man, that is one hell of a Macarena or a waltz, or I don't even know.
That's a dance that I think we all struggle to pull off. Yeah. It is. It's a lot, but the community part is important, I think, just to have that sanity, even if you kind of have to force it in when it works for you, or you know, carve out that time when maybe you're not feeling it. I can say that there's been plenty of times where I didn't feel up to going out and connecting with people. And I got home and I'm like, oh, that was so wonderful.
Exactly. It's one of those things like exercise where I never go and then say, I shouldn't have done that, right? Or I shouldn't have exercised. I have a whole lot of reasons why I shouldn't go to that event or why I shouldn't exercise before it. But after it, I rarely ever regret it, right?
Correct. Yes. So I just want to take a minute to share a little bit about what is coming up. So next week, we are speaking with Rose from the Alzheimer's and Dementia Society. Oh, I might have that. I might not
no,
have
you
that
have it right.
Do I? Of Wisconsin. Right. Yep. Yes. So she'll be coming up next week. And then we have a town hall on May 21st that we would love for you caregivers to attend. And you can register for that on our website, theempoweredcaregivercommunity.com. It's a virtual event. It's actually happening via chat. So you can listen to us on the radio show. We're going to throw out some questions to caregivers, and we're just looking to collect information and get feedback that we can forward to hopefully, you know, make some change on a governmental level to support caregivers.
Right. Our participation in the National Virtual Caregiving Hall this past week was interesting. I didn't know if I was going to like the whole chat feature, but I did, because one of the things that's happened as I've done more and more Zooms and webinars is I try to multitask, right? But being in a chat, you actually have to be present because comments and questions are coming in, and I wanted to speak back to people, right? And so it actually got me much more engaged than I thought it was going to. And so I liked it.
I did as well. Yeah, that's an excellent point. I didn't think about that, but as a ADHDer, it's anything that holds my focus is a good tool in my toolbox. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that on May 21st. And like I said, you can join us. You can sign up at theempoweredcaregivercommunity.com.
Right. And that website is also going to be a great place to keep following us and seeing the different things we're putting in the works. As you might have heard, we want to do workshops. And so we're going to have some workshop planning and some offerings in the early fall. And so following us at either our socials or looking for us at empoweredcaregivercommunity.com will be a great way to find out about the programming that's ahead.
Yes.
I think it's interesting that we really kind of have taken these focuses, right? So this focus for April has been all about the different types of caregivers, which is why, you know, we started with a Grace, and then we had people from the Autism Society. And then today we had Gilda's Club. Next week, we're going to have the Alzheimer's Society. And then in May, we're going to be looking at more of these political actions and advocacy steps that people can take leading up to our virtual town hall. I'm excited about it. We've been doing good stuff.
We have been doing good stuff. And then in June, we're going to take a look at more of the coaching perspective and address some of the burnout and how you can remain a rock star while caregiving, you know, dip our toe a little bit into the supporting the mental health aspect of caregiving. So that'll be really fun and interesting as well.
Excellent. Well, as always, Liza, I love talking with you and I learned something from all of our guests. Ladies and gentlemen, peeps out there, I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to The Empowered Caregiver. And as Lester Holt would say, please take care of yourself and each other. Bye.
Bye-bye.